How do you think this makes you a better leader in the when it is time to do community or be, you know, a communalist? How do you think this has helped you with that too?
Well, I think and believe that I'm a part of a community. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing. I don't see myself as an island unto myself. Mm-hmm. I see myself as a part of a family, of a neighborhood, of a community, of a city, of a county, of a state, of a nation, of a world, mm-hmm. of a universe. And that may sound very philosophical and esoteric, but I really do believe it. Mm-hmm. I believe that we are here for each other. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the movie that Will Smith is in, Collateral Beauty, but I hear that that's one of the lines in it, that we're here for each other. I firmly believe that. We're not here to sort of wax and wane about our own individual importance. It's about, at the end of the day, it's about the species. It's about life. Mm-hmm. And it's not really about me or any one individual.
Yeah.
Although it is. That's the conundrum.
Right? Yeah, because you got it. It's the you know, when you were telling the story about being an activist and getting a C, with my students, I'll go, you can go be an activist as long as you got good grades. You know, like, you got to put the mask on first, and then you can help other people. Right. But if you're not taking care of you, then I can't let you be a link in the chain, because we can't rely on you, and we kind of need you.
Right.
And if you need to take some time to be a really good link right now, let's do that. But I use the activism as the carrot, mm-hmm. To get them to want to, like, finally be the me that they need to be for the rest of us.
Right, right. Yeah. It is so important, too, you know, and the education is not just... It's not just the letter scores, it's what you learn in focusing on getting good grades. That's what a lot of people don't understand. But, you know, community is, and I was raised that way. And I'm from a uniquely, it's one of the things that people of African descent have in common with Latinos and Native peoples. And I was literally told by my family, I was told, everywhere you go, mm-hmm. you are a reflection of this house, this family, and more importantly, this community. Mm-hmm. This community will be judged in part by how you act. And that may seem like an onerous thing. And it is in some ways.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You just, you know, you don't want to be the poster child for a community sometimes. I mean, you just don't. Because you screw up at all. The black people, see what the black people.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, you do well at all. He's one of the good ones, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll give him a shot. But it's true, though. You are a reflection of them. And if you love them, you want to represent them well. And... I was always taught too, and I didn't know this until I got to college. I didn't know this was a part of an African tradition, and that is, your success is defined not by the degree you attain, the job you have, the letters after your name, how much money you have, where you vacation, and all that type of stuff, kind of purse you carry. Your success is defined by the extent to which and the way in which you use whatever social, economic, and political capital you acquire on behalf of others, particularly the community that you come from. Mm-hmm. And in African tradition, in many West African societies, if you didn't do that, you were expelled, like, from the mm-hmm. community until you proved yourself mm-hmm. as worthy of coming back, because you were, like you just said, your selfishness was a weak link mm-hmm. in the community chain. Yeah. And it's not just about you, it's about what you can do for the community. And that's the hardest thing to communicate. I think that's one of the hardest things about D&I work mm-hmm. in a cutthroat capitalist society, because everything is about the bottom line, particularly mm-hmm. with companies.
Yeah.
You know, a company doesn't have a diversity statement.
Yeah.
But why do they have diversity statements? They have diversity statements for the same reason why milk has a sell-by label on it, right? Mm-hmm. A perish date, because they were pushed to do that either by legal action mm-hmm. or through activism because they were pushed. But that doesn't mean that they really truly embrace it. You know, maybe I've lost contracts and I probably have by doing this, but I've told some CEOs, look, you know, they say, well, we want to buy into it, but you got to be able to, you know, you got to be able to tell us what the bottom line is. And I'm saying, look, if this is where the conversation is going to start with you,
yeah,
then I would prefer to go work someplace else. Because I can do that. I can do that dog and pony show with you. I can show you how you're going to make more money by, quote unquote, leveraging diversity and all that type of thing. I can do that. But if that's where you want to open with,
yeah,
I don't know if I don't know that your head is right yet.
Yeah.
You know, and I could come in and hopefully work with you to get you to a different place, but I'm not there with you.
See, that's interesting. I have that question down too. And I think when I ask it, like I'll read it and then I'll kind of tell you the thinking behind it. Like, I'm always fascinated why people are so willing to forego the opportunity of like us and we and the hard work that it takes to get there. Because it's just like Spike Lee said at the Academy Awards last year. Why are you only making movies for some of us when you can make movies for all of us and make so much more money? Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I think that's a really bottom line statement. But I think, too, with what I'm noticing we're having in the conversation, is so much it's, I think, anymore it's about looking good instead of being good. And I think they're asking you, how do I look good and make a lot of money looking good rather than doing the work that I got to do to be good?
Oh, man, that's so true. It reminds me, I was asked to give a keynote address. I won't say because it's a city in the greater Phoenix area. Mm-hmm. I was asked to give a keynote address, and I sent them, you know, a picture and a bio like they would normally ask you to do. Mm-hmm. And I got an email back from an African-American woman who was heading up the effort, who was just apologizing for the first four sentences. And I said, my goodness, what are they going to ask me?
Yeah.
And they asked me if I could send another picture because I wasn't smiling in the one that I sent.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some people on the committee who thought I looked angry. And the funny thing is that's just the way I look when I'm not grinning from ear to ear. You know, yeah. I wasn't angry at anybody, but that showed you where their mind was.
Mm-hmm.
Even people who are asking me to come in and talk about diversity and inclusion were engaging in stereotype embracing of an African-American man who was perceived as being threatening because I wasn't grinning in the picture. And so they wanted me to perform even in the picture that I sent.
Right.
And so I hear exactly what you're saying. And a lot of the people in the corporate world, that's what they're doing. And I think they're doing it. There's several reasons, but I think one of the reasons is their primary goal is to make money, to please their shareholders, and to make a profit.
Yeah.
That's what drives everything. And that's problematic. You know, when asked King, Martin Luther King, since we're approaching King Day, literally said, I don't know if capitalism and Christianity are compatible.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I don't know that human beings, he suggested, have the wherewithal to be able to pull back and not go from capitalism, cutthroat capitalism, but he didn't even know that capitalism was not, he didn't think communism was good either, but he said, I just don't know about this. And so that's part of it. The other problem is we are immersed in Eurocentrism.
Yeah.
You know, even when people acknowledge that diversity and inclusion is important because in many ways they're pressured to, they really don't get how Eurocentric our society really still is.
Yeah.
And how much people of color and non, you know, immigrants sacrifice and suppress just to fit in. They don't really get that. And I think the third issue is everybody thinks they understand it.
Yeah.
And they think they understand it from a real kumbaya thing. It's like, well, I was always, to my parents always taught not to judge people by the color of their skin. Or, you know, I'm colorblind, or I'm as if D&I can be reduced
to colorblindness.
To colorblindness.
Yeah.
You know, as if, Christianity can be reduced to saying, well, yeah, I believe in Jesus. But what does that mean?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
A lot of people believe in Jesus. Do they all look the same? Do they all practice the same way? Mm-hmm. Does it affect their life the same way? No. Diversity and inclusion is very complicated, even for the people who want to engage in it. And I just don't, folks don't have an appreciation for it. And the reason, the way you can gauge it is the way you gauge anything in a capitalist society. And that's the degree to which people are willing to invest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And folks think we're missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. They believe that what we're doing somehow is a kumbaya service, and they struggle to compensate people for doing, because it is work. You got to eat.
Yeah.
They struggle to want to compensate people for it because they really don't see the work. See, in America, particularly in the Western world, we pay for what we value.
Mm-hmm.
We value big screen TVs.
Yeah.
We value cars and expensive bags. We value football.
Yeah.
You know, we and we will pay.
Yeah.
I mean, people pay $60 to watch Ronda Rousey fight for 48 seconds and get knocked out again.
Yeah.
Poor people pay for that.
Yeah.
You know, but you want to come in and help inoculate a corporation or a nonprofit or a school against conflict, against ignorance, against, well, no, you got to give me the business case for that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and it's so sad. Well, I think that's what I'm trying to do here with the podcast is like, well, why is it worth it really? You know, not just for you and making a lot of money, but why is it just worthwhile? Because, I mean, you know, let's be real, this job is a kick in the teeth a lot. I mean, over and over again. I mean, it's watching daily headlines of your failure and how we could do better. I mean, you know.
That's so, I love that. That's so true.
I mean,
so true.
And just knowing we got so much further to go. But there's still a reason it's worth it. And I think that's what I'm hoping to communicate from like a really personal perspective, is it is worth it though.
Oh, it is. It's definitely worth it. And you know, the evidence of it is all around us, but we don't notice it.
Yeah.
D and I
notice that what works.
Oh yeah.
Because it's fine.
Well, you say, yeah. Well, and D and I work has been around for thousands of years. We just haven't called it that. People working on behalf of educating others about difference, about similarity, about using those similarities to bridge differences, to embrace differences, to help us understand how to make ourselves better. We've been doing this for millennia. And to the degree that we have improved as a species can be credited, in my opinion, to diversity and inclusion. We just have not used those terms to classify them. And we have all sorts of practices and exercises and terminology now that's specific, just like anything else. Medicine has been around for thousands of years. It looks very different now than it did back then, you know, 50,000 years ago, 30,000 years ago, whatever the case may be, but it works. It may not look like it works because of vast communication, the access to the internet, and just sort of this barrage of information that we have all the time, but it does work. And I think that's what we need to convey to people is that, you know, to the business owner, you have your business because diversity and inclusion has worked. Whether it's the fact that somebody saw the humanity in your ancestor who immigrated from Poland or from England or from Italy or from Greece or from Africa or from Latin America, somebody was thinking in a diverse and an inclusive way. You know, whether
you have to be inclusive because you need customers,
right? Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, people building bonds, whether it's Jewish and Italian communities in New York or Puerto Rican and Cuban communities in Miami or Black and Latino and Asian in Los Angeles, they've had to learn how to coexist. If not, we constantly be at each other's throats. So it works. People just don't know what they're looking at. You know, oftentimes I'd like to tell, you know, SVPs and CEOs, you're sitting in that desk because of diversity and inclusion. You just don't know. Right? If you're Coca-Cola, you're Coca-Cola because of diversity and inclusion. You're not Coca-Cola because white Anglo-Saxon males made you a billion-dollar company.
Right.
You're Coca-Cola because people all over the planet have drank it, and people have been able to market it to them in a certain way. But they have opened themselves up to enriching you. You don't have to.
Right.
You know, so that's what keeps me going is the fact that it's all around us. You just, people are hard-headed. And the more successful you are and the more so-called pedigreed you are, the harder your head generally is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm spending this new year with a resolution just to try to meditate and be mindful and think in more of a Buddhist wee way. Because I'm reading a book on Christian hegemony right now and just how that shapes your thinking and dualism and everything else. And so, you know, I need to keep my savior because I think that person's there for me. But at the same point in time, I need to change my thinking a little bit. And it's finding a way to like communicate it differently. I think there's a decent opportunity with the social sustainability. Like, I think we can code that lingo into D&I work.
Right.
And then I was trying to think of a way to talk about the benefit of like nonviolence and community. And I was like, cooperative competition. where you acknowledge that you, you know, like if you're playing basketball, you value the person you're playing basketball against, because at the end of the day, they're holding you too. You have that experience of competition back and forth. It's not about beating them. It's about the process of enjoying the game and getting better together. But it's finding new ways to communicate it where people are immediately turned off because you said the word diversity and that doesn't mean them.
Right. It is, you know, it's funny. I said something very nerdy to someone recently. I can't remember what I was. They just sort of stared at me with this blank look because they asked me the similar question. Why do you do what you do? And I gave them all the background nuts and bolts. And I said, well, you know, at the end of the day, and I really believe this, but this is where the real geek and nerd comes out. Because this is the type of stuff we think about. Mm-hmm. Okay. I say, look, our existence as a species depends upon us figuring out a way to get along and embrace ourselves and all of our difference and diversity. Because in about, at the end of about 3.5 billion years, it'll start happening well before that. Mm-hmm. Sun is gonna start to expand. Mm-hmm. It's middle age right now. It ain't gonna live forever. Mm-hmm. The Earth's gonna heat up and the planet's gonna burn up. Mm-hmm. So we haven't figured out how to get along and to see ourselves as one and move someplace else without bringing genocide and destruction and
which is a constant
hate,
threat.
Right, to wherever we go, we're going to be in a world of hurt. And folks can't relate to that because that's like you're talking about your grandchildren's generation times 1,000, mm-hmm. right? And so they're thinking, why am I worried about that? Well, if you care about human beings, and I really do, I care about human beings. I think we're wonderful. And life on this planet ain't gonna exist forever. Mm-hmm. And even in different religious traditions, there's an engagement of that notion, mm-hmm. right? And so we gotta get it together because the clock is ticking. Yeah. And I don't wanna go someplace else and bring our hatred and
we're just gonna blow that place up.
No, there? I mean, come on, we gotta learn our lesson someplace else. I mean, wherever we go. And that's a real nerdy, somebody said, man, Doc, that's real deep. And I said, Doc, why are you worrying about what's going to happen 3.5 billion years from now? And I said, well, maybe I just have too much time on my hands. I don't know. But
well, thinking that way is the thing that helps you today.
Right.
Which is the thing that helps you tomorrow. You know, it's, I think we are always thinking really far out. But then too, it all comes right, you know, it's the we me thing, right? There's that balance, right? You gotta take care of you, but if it's about you, you're missing it.
Yeah,
you know, it's about us, but you gotta be a good you for us.
Yeah.
Because we can't afford you.
You gotta, and you have to think long term and short term at the same time. Because, for instance, even now, you know how many species went extinct in the last 10 years?
Yeah.
That our grandchildren will never see, and their leopards are now on the list. There are other things, and to me, they're beautiful. They're all very unique. And when they're gone, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be the same for us.
Yeah.
We're gone, you know? And unless you believe in, you know, parallel universes, and that's probably another podcast and all that
yeah,
stuff. But my doppelganger, you know, I want to live in this realm, you know what I mean? And I want to do as well as we can.
Yeah.
And even if we didn't have that end game, even if that wasn't staring us down long into the future, I just think I love us, mm-hmm. and I love our ability and potential to interact within our environment in constructive ways, and quite frankly, I think we'll get there. I should not be an optimist if one would look at everything swirling around us, intellectually speaking,
yeah.
that you could challenge the notion of optimism, but I am, and I believe that we will overcome this intellectual and spiritual sort of adolescence that we're in right now.
The dissonance.
Yeah, it's
over the reality.
Yeah, a lot of suffering is going to happen. It's going to be more before us, but I do believe we'll overcome it. And because we're remarkably intelligent and creative,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so. And for selfish reasons, I think most human beings see themselves. I see myself in the future, mm-hmm. in terms of wanting to contribute to future humanity, mm-hmm. and I don't want my life to be in vain. or my children.
Well, and two, you have that value there. I'm reading another book right now called The Go-Giver, and it's just a real quick little, you know, those business happy little books that they put out. But it's about giving it away first and understanding that you have deep value and that you don't necessarily lose your value by giving pieces of it away.
Right.
More so you expose yourself then to your value.
Which
validates that it's there.
That's so profound.
I know, right?
The arch enemy of diversity and inclusion is people not understanding, thinking that it's all zero sum game.
Yeah.
It's like the arch enemy. It's personalizing when you talk about, for instance, you know, heteronormativity, you talk about white supremacy, and you talk about white supremacy to a white person who is not particularly eager to talk about that. They one of the reasons why they're not eager to talk about this, and I've learned this through 20 years of teaching, is that 9 out of 10 of them will think you're talking about them.
Yeah.
As an individual.
Right.
And, well, I never did this to anybody, and I never did that. Well, I understand that.
Right.
But here's the thing that really sucks, to use just just an average phrase, the thing that really sucks.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you did it or not.
Right. Yeah.
That's when we start talking about, and you don't have to do anything to anybody. Mm-hmm. For these systems to continue to be oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
That is the foul gift of our founding fathers, for lack of a better phrase, is that they created a system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they created a system to ensure that their power would rest in the hands of people who look like them.
Mm-hmm.
White, Anglo-Saxon, Protestants. And it's a really good system. If you're a white, Anglo-Saxon, it's a well-built system.
Yeah.
So much so that even white allies of people of color and the poor and people who suffer unjustly, even white allies don't have to do anything for their privilege to still
exist. Yeah.
They don't. And that's the thing. Yeah, I don't know what it's like to be white, but I know that would probably really piss me off, is that I don't want to inherit that. Like, so what I try to tell people is, don't be mad at the D&I specialist for bringing this to your attention.
Yeah.
You just want to be frustrated at the situation. Like,
yes.
You know, those founding...
things are this way.
Yeah, the founding fathers
are
dead.
It's not my fault that I'm telling you that this way.
No, like, don't kill the messenger.
Yeah.
The founding fathers are gone. So you can't do nothing to them. Right. They're gone. Yeah. Hating them is not going to get us anywhere. Or being angry is not going to get us anywhere.
Yeah.
The messenger is not going to get us anywhere. Personalizing yourself is not going to get us. I don't want you to feel guilty. Like, me as a person of color, I don't benefit from white guilt at all.
No.
I don't. You know?
It's actually all the sadder.
Right.
You know something, and all you decided to do is to be depressed about it.
Yeah, I don't benefit from it at all. And I don't want you to feel, I don't want to see people walking around feeling guilty. That's not constructive.
It doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything. So that doesn't help either. What I want you to do is to open your mind, be open to understanding why all of this works, to be able to use whatever resources you have, intellectual, cultural, political, whatever the case may be, to aid and change.
Mm-hmm.
And then be active about it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody's going to lead a march. I mean, you may not have that personality, but you could write a check. Not everybody's going to have any money, but you could show up and you could stuff envelopes at a local event, or, you know, you could go help register people to vote. Whatever. Everybody can do something.
Learn, become more active.
Right. Like, it's just do something.
Yeah.
Do something. Just I don't have a racist bone in my body. Okay, that's not constructive.
Well, until you do it, it's okay. And so do we. I mean,
right.
We both do. If I'm willing to stand in front of you saying I'm a diversity and inclusion specialist that is struggling with my own racism, then just calm down.
Just calm down.
What about your own?
Just calm down.
I'm used to wearing and working on it.
And you know the funny thing is, I said this to somebody, I'm writing it in my memoir. One of the things that I've admitted that is one of my biases is I'm more comfortable around poor and working class white people than I am around wealthy ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the wealthy ones are far more genteel.
Mm-hmm.
They'll smile more. They'll invite you to things more.
Yeah.
They'll do the nicer things for you, the materialistic things. They know all the politically correct stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But my poor and middle class white brothers and sisters, they don't have to just give it to you straight.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they don't have anything to lose.
There's nothing to lose. This is like,
they have anything to lose.
Exactly the same words.
Many of them are kind of in the same boat economically as you are. And then, whatever it is, they will reveal however they're thinking for whatever reason. And I can get down with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like, what was the song about it? Was it the OJs, the backstabbers? I don't like backstabbers. Mm-hmm. I like people who would tell me to my face, hey man, like, your folks are taking all our jobs. See, I can have a conversation with you. Why do you think that? You know,
right.
Or man, that's a bunch of nonsense. I'm taking your jobs. But you know, I can have a conversation with,
right.
But the people who just always pretend to, you know, you know, Tyler Perry does that sort of impressionation really well, where you sort of smile. It's like,
right.
You know, that sort of falseness.
Yeah.
That I find, that's my cross to bear. And I know that all wealthy white people are not like that.
Right.
But that's my comfort zone, because I've gotten into it with different groups. I've had, you know, when I was in high school, I've had fist fights with neo-Nazis. I've had shout outs with my working class white brothers and sisters. But at the end of the day, I know where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I can talk to them, and there can be some sort of armistice, which is, or growth.
Well, I've always seen them as the best potential opportunity for us. And I don't know why we keep missing them.
Because that educated elite keeps telling, convincing them.
I know, that but, we're like, the enemy. But like, we're just like, hey, whiteness is not working. Like, we're trying to actually bring you into what we do. Like, we would like to add you to our economy and exclude more of them. Because we're really looking like non-zero-sum game here, specifically. If you haven't seen it, Arrival talks about the whole non-zero-sum.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's
really,
really good. Yeah, it's amazing. Because basically, we're so stuck in our win-lose thinking. We can't conceive of that someone would come looking for a win-win. So I'm hoping it comes out.
Always worried about what other people are getting. You know, like when I hear like, see, I've never had seen, well, I've seen some politicians, some wealthy politicians do it, but I've literally had working class white people come to me and say, affirmative action ain't right. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like that, because Martin Luther King, they always want to quote Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King said, judge people by the content of the character, not the color of their skin. And I think it's reverse racism, because, you know, I might want to, you know, that's not fair, because I won't be able to get that job as easily as you, mm-hmm. quote unquote.
Right.
And I just love being able to say to them, man, what job are black people getting easily?
What's the one job where there's just tons of black people?
Yeah, right, where there's tons of black people.
It's just black people specifically.
Yeah. And I'll say, brother, like, when does a black person turn you down for a loan? When does a black person have to countersign your lease or your mortgage? When is a black person in control of the loan for your car? When is a black person have to okay your medicine? How many black pharmacists do you know? You know, how many black people are your representative for mm-hmm. your particular district? How many black people are responsible for the water transfer, your sewage system? How many black people have you met that have power over any of that over you?
And taking it a step further, like, there's a white person probably that's that thing.
Yeah, most of those people are white.
How well is that working out?
And how's that working for you?
Are they good?
Yeah.
Are they nice?
Yeah. Your interest rates are high. Your rates on your utilities are going up.
Yep.
Your rent's high. Your mortgage is high. The car payment is high. The school taxes is high. All of that. And white people are, for the most part, deciding all that. You mad at me? I'm just like.
But that's why you're on a show. We are literally on the same team.
No, we're on the same team.
I need you.
We're on the same team. It's just, I just feel like saying, you got to stop watching Fox News. Yeah. Because that is the white elite establishment
mm-hmm.
who is shamelessly manipulating the working and poor white community into believing that immigrants and poor white people too
mm-hmm.
and others are the demise of our America. That's why it's disappearing. It's because of those people. No, Jack.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. It's not because of those people. In whatever industry you're looking at, it's not. So, a walk of life. But I love that struggle. I will always be committed to having those conversations with those people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's engaging because it's a colorful conversation. You can have a conversation with somebody who's not either in denial or dissembling.
Yeah.
Just pretending as though it's not happening. Those type of folks, that's two-stepper for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when another thing I have to work on. That's when I get the most fiery.
Mm-hmm.
Is dealing with those folks. I do not like to be condescending.
My partner always loves your fieriness, by the way. Whenever you get fired, she just starts getting pumped up and excited.
Like, well, it don't take a lot.
I try to find spaces for you to get fiery because she just loves it to death. But you're right, because then you're right. You're falling into that trap, the angry black man.
And yeah, I just don't like
just
it. I don't. And the thing, too, is, and I know I'm going on, too, I get really fiery among people of color who are lackadaisical.
Yeah.
And I know I'm so, because when you're an activist and you're a person of color, you know this, you, one of the last things you want to do is be another critical person of people of color, because so many people are coming from so many different areas. And my criticalness is never in any of the stuff that they're getting from the outside. My criticalness is getting people just to get a better sense of urgency.
Yeah.
You know, and to not fight each other so much.
Yeah.
You know, that it drives me absolutely crazy, because that's when we lose out. You know, I said, I'll just say this. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump in the election. I voted, but I'm not going to say who I voted for. Mm-hmm. But I told people, and we've had this conversation, mm-hmm. well over a year ago that Donald Trump was going to win. Mm-hmm. And I knew he was going to win for a number of different reasons, not the least of which is a lack of understanding among, not a lot, but enough mm-hmm. people of color as to what exactly was going on. Mm-hmm. Why Hillary Clinton... What they were saying to each other.
Yeah.
Also, why Hillary Clinton was a flawed candidate. Why people would be so drawn to Donald Trump. Enough people of color, not a lot, mm-hmm. but enough, drank the Kool-Aid that it made it more possible.
Yeah.
You know, and Donald Trump is one of the... Again, he's very transparent. He said, look, I targeted the Electoral College.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it, too.
Basically, what he's saying is, I targeted the old Confederate states. Mm-hmm. I targeted working class, middle class, well, even more than white
that,
people.
You know, because it's not a Confederate thing, right? I mean, he found those people in Wisconsin. Living in Wisconsin, I can tell you. Like, outside of those cities, like, that thought is there.
Oh, it's there. And that's because those white... This is where history comes in. A lot of those white folks are migrants from the South. Mm-hmm. Or they're immigrants who moved there generations ago, who harbored the same idea about non-white immigrants mm-hmm. and people of color as Southerners did. That's how they became white. They became white and became American by not liking black folks and natives and people of color. That's how you become American. Mm-hmm. So he tapped into that. You know, it's no accident. The second rising of the Klan was in Michigan. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in the South.
Yeah.
And it was able to rise in Michigan because it tapped into that working class. It was a brilliant political strategy.
Yeah.
And not enough of us understood the level of fear and angst among people of color, among white people. And not enough of us understood the number of people of color who are also disenchanted with Hillary Clinton. So my frustration comes, it's like the people who should know better.
Yeah.
It's like, what, you honestly thought that there was going to be a different outcome? What America are you living in? That's why I love history so much. It's like, if you take my classes and you study history, the outcome of this election should not have been a shock.
Yeah.
If you were paying attention, if you're really paying close attention, but just because Hollywood teased Donald Trump, mm-hmm. just because actors and celebrities and the people we see on top of the magazines supporting him, just because Hillary Clinton got 2.5 billion more or whatever in the popular vote, it didn't matter. The Electoral College was created to preserve slavery. Mm-hmm. That's why it was created. It was created because black people outnumbered white people in the South and in certain areas of the Midwest, and they didn't want that.
Yeah.
So they gave them they created the Electoral College and gave them essentially more votes to be able to overcome the votes of those three-fifths of a person.
Yeah.
The Electoral College is a remnant of slavery and white supremacy itself. And that's what he targeted, because he's a good white supremacist.
Although what's interesting is now like, you know, coastal liberal elites that, and I did my first podcast on liberal elitism too, because that was something that, that's a conversation that needs to have had happen.
Oh yeah.
But now they understand this fifth of a person concept. So I'm hoping that can be a wedge for us in the future of that, you know, this is what it's like to not all the way count. And we've reduced to kind of this not all the way counting thing.
Yeah.
So you need to embrace this, because they're now it's happening to you. So
right.
Get on board, you know.
And I think we have to push liberal elites. We got to hold them accountable too. Mm-hmm. And I think we've grown a little soft in doing that.
Yeah.
And part of it is because there's so much vitriol coming from the far right, until you just feel like, well, you don't want to push your allies.
Right.
But our allies started taking us for granted.
Yeah.
Particularly the elite.
Yeah.
And we've got to do better mm-hmm. with that. And the only way that's going to happen is if we hold them accountable.
Well, I'm hoping we show them like the value of the process, right? That don't just be excited because you know something, because you have a head knowledge of something.
Right.
You need to have an empathetic stomach gut knowledge of this concept, and you need to have action. Because if you know something and you don't do anything with what you know, you might as well not know.
You might as well not know. Right. And you have to understand the system. Somebody said to me, well, that's one of the reasons why Hillary didn't win is because people like you didn't vote for her. She got 2.5 million more votes than him. No, it has nothing to do with
it
people like me.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with me. I just talked about the electoral college and the system. No, it had nothing to do with it. That's one of the reasons why I did it. Because folks need to be shook or shaken?
Yeah.
They need to be stirred up into reality because they're not getting it. And they keep thinking, well, you know, 2050 and demographic change and Latinos are the biggest majority and people of color are going to be the majority in 20.
A lot of Latinos voted for
it. And they did. And there's this place called South Africa.
Yeah.
Apartheid South Africa where you had a white minority controlling a black and so-called colored majority. Numbers in the Western capitalist tradition do not necessarily translate into power.
Mm-hmm.
Or control.
Yeah.
And we've got to get away from this obsession with demographics because, you know, now we have one party, which is overwhelmingly white,
mm-hmm.
that looks eerily familiar to the way that Europe looked in 1939, that controls the Senate and Congress, most governorships, the military-industrial complex, and they're moving in on communication. All while our numbers have been growing, we've been talking about 2050.